So one of the things that, one of the donations essentially that West Midlands Police had was from a dog food company to hold an event for police dogs. And, you know, it wasn't the biggest scandal or anything like that. It was just a really colourful piece of information that you had this slightly curious situation where they were accepting some free, you know, a free event that they had to declare, and it was all aimed at the dogs. So that's for cost. The other thing is you have broadly two types of exemptions, what are called absolute exemptions and qualified exemptions. I won't worry about the jargon too much. Qualified exemptions are the main one that you can kind of argue about. Absolute exemptions, and the kind of clue is in the term, are kind of, that's the end of the discussion to some extent. Now, you don't have to remember all of these. It's just, you know, you can always Google absolute exemptions, or if someone comes back with these, then you kind of can Google those as well. So the one of the exemptions is information that is accessible by other means. In other words, it's already been published. So it's on our website. We don't need, just go to our website. So that's pretty straightforward. Sometimes they will say it's exempt because we are about to publish it. So it hasn't yet been published, but it will be. And that can be a bit shaky. Sometimes they can delay it. But that's one exemption. State security is one that you would probably expect. Court records are exempt. And parliamentary privilege, which is... I don't know if you want to talk a bit about...
I may be legally shaky on this, but from my understanding, it's not the information that MPs have themselves, or I could be totally bucking up the wrong tree there.
It's kind of, well, parliamentary privilege is kind of, you can say things in Parliament that you couldn't say outside of Parliament, particularly things that are defamatory. So I could, if I'm a politician and I'm in Parliament, I can say Alessandro is corrupt and not to be trusted, and he can't sue me because of parliamentary privilege.
Well, is it the same thing that happened a couple of years ago in the Parliament with Ryan Giggs and that when the MP?
Yes, yeah. There's been a few occasions recently where Trafigura was another one, recently with the FIFA investigation, where politicians have said things in Parliament basically to allow newspapers to report them. So the Ryan Giggs thing, organisations could not report that this was being said about Ryan Giggs, but when someone said it in Parliament, they could report that he had said that in Parliament. But they had to report just that, and they had to report it accurately and kind of as kind of verbatim.
We use it. Tom Watson does it quite a lot, especially around kind of Murdoch Press and some of the child abuse stories that have been coming out. And we use it as well. I've been doing a story about this businessman who is, I don't want to say anything defamatory, but he is basically a bit of a rascal at quite a high level. And he's very litigious. So the only way that we could manage to publish anything about him was to use, fortunately, he'd been referenced in Parliament quite extensively, and we were able to report that, although we were quite careful to qualify it.
Yeah.
To say, this is, you know, it was said in Parliament that X, Y, Z. So it's reportage of what happened in Parliament rather than just a kind of regurgitation of the facts.
Does that point to that side?
Yes.
Any comment?
Would that also link into or would it be sort of honest, the Bernie Eccleston trial where he sort of bribed his way out of a case that he was in sort of 8 years ago?
Is that in Germany?
Yeah.
Unless someone said something about it in the British, in the UK Parliament, then probably not.
My understanding is, I mean, it's a slightly different form of privilege, what you can report that comes out of courts. But my understanding is that I've just changed British law that you can report documents from foreign courts have a degree of privilege. So if there's any documentation from the German court, you would be able to report on that.
Yeah.
And you'd have a degree of legal protection. But, So it's a lot shakier than the parliamentary.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's worth pointing out that courts, there's a similar situation with reporting what happens in court as well, in that the idea is that you should be able to say things in court without being afraid of being sued for kind of libel or whatever. It's just pertaining to that case. So this is a good example. I think it was Press Gazette were doing some FOI requests to ask whether police forces had used certain powers to look at journalists' phone record. And the Association of Chief Police Officers had sent guidance to all the police forces saying, if you get this request, say no and say it's national security. So what they did was, I mean, actually a lot of them ignored it, but they also FOI'd for that correspondence, for that guidance, and that guidance itself became a story. So you might want to, so if you have an FOI request turned down, you could follow up and ask for any correspondence relating to that FOI request. And you might, and it's going to be harder in many ways for them to deny the correspondence. And you might turf up people saying, oh, this guy's a plonker, you know, just make some excuse or whatever. And remember, it's anybody that holds that information. So one of those bodies might not be subject to FOI, if you like, but if the other body is. So if you've got Coca-Cola sending an email to Birmingham City Council, Coca-Cola is not subject to the Freedom of Information Act, but Birmingham City Council are. So some more absolute exemptions, prejudice to the conduct of public affairs. This is probably the most widely abused one. So we can't do our business properly if you know what we're actually doing. Personal data is pretty self-explanatory. Information that's provided in confidentiality, in other words, or legally prohibited. So basically information which would not be published because of other laws. So contempt of court would be one law that might prevent some information being supplied while a court case is ongoing. But, you know, it's unlikely you're going to come across most of these. And if you do, the key thing is to just find out a bit more about it and kind of work out if you think it really does apply. So here's one where certainly none of it should apply. How much has the champagne bill changed over the last few years? And again, there's lots of detail here. What brands of drinks or... you know, you can tell where I come from. I can't pronounce any of these. Taittinger, Lenoble. I'm sure they're all pronounced in particular ways that make sure that only, you know, that you can demonstrate your class by being able to pronounce these properly. But those are the less interesting ones. The qualified exemptions are where it gets interesting. Qualified exemptions are where there's normally some sort of public interest test. Would the public interest in releasing this information outweigh the public interest in keeping hold of the information? So one of those is prejudice of law enforcement, that if we give you this information, it will make it harder for us to enforce the law. So a common one with those might be, one of those that I was involved in was the Olympic torch relay. And police would not say kind of how many police officers they had on a particular stretch of the route because they thought it would allow terrorists to kind of plan better if they were going to do an attack. Commercial interest is quite a common one. If commercial interest is the exemption, one thing you can do is ask for, you know, that doesn't necessarily apply to everything I've asked for. If you're asking for a contract, again, say between Birmingham City Council and Coca-Cola, they might say that's commercially sensitive. But you can go back and say, well, redact the bits that are commercially sensitive, but give me the rest. Because not the whole contract is going to be commercially sensitive, only parts of it are. International relations basically means it would upset France if we told you this. So if they do say no, particularly with a qualified exemption, that's not the end of the process. You can ask for their evidence and their argument because they have to make an assessment. They have to weigh up the public interest on one side and the public interest on the other side. I've mentioned a thing about whether it's the whole or the part. You can request an internal appeal if they say no. That's the first step. If that fails, then you appeal to the Information Commissioner's Office, which is the body that oversees freedom of information and the other two laws, which I'll briefly mention. And even beyond that, you can appeal to higher bodies still, like the High Court, as Heather Brook did, and two other journalists, over the MP's expenses. They had to go right through this process over a period of about 5 years to get their information. Now, the thing about the ICO is that they publish guidance in their judgments, and this is really useful to quote when you're making requests or if you're making an argument. So this is the Information Commissioner's decision notices page, database, and this allows you to search all of their decision notices. Decision notices are basically judgments. So if someone has been refused under confidentiality or refused under national security or whatever, you can search for national security confidentiality. And you can just look at the ones where the complaint was upheld, for example, where basically the person won and the body lost. And you can quote those decisions in your request if you feel that you might need to. So you might say, someone asked for this information 2 years ago, and the Information Commissioner said that they had a right to that information, that the public interest outweighed it. And if you mention this sort of stuff, it sends out quite a clear signal that you're serious, you know what you're doing, and they're in for maybe a bit of a fight that they're going to end up losing. So just, I mean, final points about telling the actual story once you get the information. I've said about data and documents. The data gives you the big picture and tells you why it matters. But you ideally, you want a human case study. You want to find someone, which you can't do for FOI, that is going to tell you why you should care about this story. And as I said, the documents often give you the detail, what people should be doing, what the advice is, what the guidance is, what people said in correspondence. And I'll play you this little video as a good explanation of that. Hopefully. This is where I find out the audio's not working, don't I? Yeah, okay. Well, that worked well, didn't it? Anyway, this is a video about jaywalking. Someone did an FOI request about just police arrests, and they were looking at police arrests and ethnicity, and they found that in particularly a black neighbourhood in Illinois called Champaign, there were a significant number of people being arrested for jaywalking, walking on the street, and particularly in this one street, where there is no sidewalk, there is no pavement. So that's why people are being arrested, and hundreds of people being charged and fined in this predominantly black neighbourhood. So they went out, they filmed the street, they filmed people walking, they talked to them. That's what brought that story to life, not just the numbers. This was quite a good one on police cautions. Who's had the most cautions? Being let off. Attacks in prisons. What I really like about this is that it doesn't lead on 4,000 attacks or 14,000 assaults. It's 5 attacks every day, because if you bring it down to a manageable number, a daily number or a per-person number, it's easier for us to get our heads around. 14,000 just seems like an abstract big number, but 5 attacks per day, we can kind of feel that. We can imagine that much better. Foster children separated from siblings. A really human story. How many nurses would loo rolls, money wasted on loo rolls, pay for? So again, we're kind of making that money meaningful. It's not just 25 million, it's 700 nurses. So when you phrase the request, try and imagine the story or the research that you're going to be writing up from it. What information will you need to tell that story? Often the details of the particular crimes, the particular ages, will help bring that to life. know what information they actually collect in the first place. One of the things you can request is what's called a data dictionary, which is all the fields in their database in terms of all the types of information that they collect. There might be information that you hadn't thought to ask for. And don't assume that they know what you mean when you ask for things. Be really specific. I want it per year. I want it, per crime or per person. If you know the jargon, if you can find out the jargon that they use. So, for example, the jargon for leaving medical equipment inside someone during surgery or chopping off the wrong leg, that's called a never event. These are events that are never supposed to happen. So if you request deep data on never events, that is the official jargon for that. And as a warning tale on this, claim-related crimes, okay? So the London Evening Standard did this on Metropolitan Police, okay? And then this became a crime wave of claim-related crime. And actually, when you dug into this is my favourite bit. The Guardian got Eldridge, whose claim name is Blue Bottle, said, this is doing cloning no favours and is harming society. The fear of claims is a real thing, coulrophobia, and some people will react very badly to this, not to mention people who are elderly or vulnerable. Distancing the claim community from this crime wave. Gold. But actually, it wasn't really like that. It was just the word claim used. So someone had claim motif on stolen property, a claim tattoo, cloning around, that was robbery. Malicious communications, called someone a clown. Harassment, called clown as an insult. Assault, a lot of people being called clowns. So really, it wasn't a clown crime wave. They just didn't look closely. They didn't get a right of reply. They just went straight to the clown fraternity. That nefarious network of guiding our lives. These clowns. So, make sure you ask for the context. That's a bad FOI request. This is a much more specific one. The largest individual fine, and what was the title of this item? That's the nice bit of detail there. How the money has been used. If you want more ideas, the Guardian data blog listed a request for every day of 2012. Loads of really good examples there. And the two other acts which I haven't really spent any time on. The Environmental Information Regulations is an alternative to FOI. Quite similar, but if you can find an environmental angle, then it can be more successful. And it's kind of a European piece of legislation. There are fewer exemptions, and it's a stronger law, really. But it has to have an environmental angle. It can be to do with building, pollution, so on. And the Data Protection Act gives you the right to request information held about you, or gives an individual the right. So if you're dealing with a story that involves, for example, if you know someone who has been a patient in the health system and feels that they've been treated unfairly, they can request all the documents, the correspondence about them, if you feel that you have been treated unfairly. So if you're being harassed by police, for example, you could use this to get all the information held about you. And like I said, if you make an FOI request and you suspect that it's about you as an individual, then you could request all the correspondence about you in relation to that FOI request. There can be a small charge, but it should be small. It should be reasonable. If it was excessive, you could go to the ICO and ask for advice. So, just to sum up, this isn't about law, this is about ideas. It's about you having a question about being curious, and you need to start from that, a question that you have, a claim that you want to test. If you want to do this from a journalistic point of view, you have to be prepared to wait at least 4 weeks. That's supposed to be the maximum, but many authorities now take a lot longer, longer. So an ongoing story, a repeated issue is often best. If you find out what they know first, that can save a lot of time. The BBC are notorious for this. The BBC will wait until 28 days exactly and then come back and say, can you explain that a bit more? And the BBC have a journalistic exemption as well, which they often rely on. Anticipate those excuses. Anticipate the BBC always saying it's exempt under journalistic... What do they call it? There's a journalistic exemption anyway. Any kind of stuff to do with journalism is exempt. But obviously not everything the BBC does is journalism. So anticipate those and kind of quote decision notices or the law at them if you can. Heather Brooks' book, Your Right to Know, is a really good reference point on all the various bodies that are covered. It's divided into chapters on subjects like the environment, transport, crime, health, education. So if you just go to that chapter, and they're only a few pages long, it's a very good reference point. Beyond that, Lucas Amin and, is it Brendan Montague?
Brendan Montague, yeah.
They've written two e-books, one FOIA Without the Lawyer and one on Environmental Information Regulations. These are more about the exemptions and the specifics of kind of fighting your corner. So if you get to that point, I thoroughly recommend either of those. And there are loads of bookmarks, loads of web pages and documents that I've bookmarked. Examples of FOI stories I bookmark with FOIEG. Stuff to do with FOI I bookmark with FOI. EIR, likewise, data protection, likewise. And you could also find bookmarks about confidentiality, for example. If you put /confidentiality, you'll find examples of guidance and things like that that I've used in relation to that or other exemptions. And that's it. We've gone way over what I expected to, but still...